So, as Nathan said, we're talking about happiness during this series, and the timing of the series is no accident. Maybe it feels like just a bad joke or something to some of you, but the timing of this series was actually on purpose because we're coming through this volatile election season. Let's just all take a deep breath, okay? Just let that out, okay? Do that a few more times. And now we're about to turn the corner, and we're going to head into the holidays. So for some of you, that's really exciting, and for a lot of you, that just brings with it all kinds of stresses of relationships and finances and just a really full schedule that doesn't leave a whole lot of room for you. So in all of this, we need to remember our lifeline. What we cling to when life feels unstable and unmanageable. Christian happiness is not dependent on our situation, on our circumstances. The Bible uses words like joy and contentment to describe this pervasive, foundational sense of well-being that remains even in the darkest of circumstances. And this deep happiness, this joy, is breathed into our souls and nurtured by a walk with God. As we learn to lean into God, this deep joy grows roots into our hearts, and those cannot be shaken by the circumstances we go through, because we know that we are not alone. Now, we can't get this deep joy growing inside of us if we are trusting the wrong things to get us there. So that is what Pastor Nathan talked about last week. So if you missed the first part of this series, I would encourage you to take some time this week and listen to it. It's on our website, but listen to it, because that is really the linchpin for understanding how we get to happy. We have to make sure that we are putting our hope for that in the right things. So today we're talking about choosing happiness. We can't choose the experiences we go through. We can't choose the circumstances we can suddenly find ourselves in or put ourselves in sometimes. But we can choose how we respond. That's what we're going to talk about today. But at first, I want to tell you a secret. Because when I sat down to start writing this sermon, I had this just really strong desire to switch places with you this morning. I really wanted to. And I don't always have that thought quite as strongly, but this week, man, can I just switch places with you? Because I felt like I needed to examine that a little, because that's not every week. And so there's two things that I came up with why I would love to switch places with you right now. So the first one is, I know the hard struggles and the experiences that you have either walked through or are walking through right now. And the last thing that I want to do is make light of those. And I don't want to add more weight for you to carry by saying, oh, and on top of that, could you try to be happy? It's the last thing I want to do. And then there's the second thing I realized, that I really rather sit back and pick apart this idea that I can choose happiness, that I carry some responsibility for my level of happiness. I would like to pick that idea apart so that I can dismiss it instead of with it. But here we are, and here I am. I have not gotten to switch places with you this morning, so we'll see what we can do. So let me tell you a little of what I've wrestled with this week, and then we'll talk about just how it is that we choose happiness. None of us walks through life very long before we start to experience challenges, pain, loss, and fear. And it can be very easy for us to wrap those moments, big or small, and those resulting feelings that come from those around us like a blanket. To hide behind them, to blame them for our troubled soul, and never move past them. It feels strangely safer that way, doesn't it? And before we know it, we can convince ourselves, right, that, well, I had no choice in how I feel, right? And therefore, how I act, I can't help it. What choice did I have? It's just who I am, right? It's just what I've been through. The truth is, we can all find a challenge or an experience to hide behind, a personality trait we can do nothing about. And those things make easy targets for us to blame when we lack joy or it feels like a far-off stranger. So that's what I've been wrestling with this week. Recognizing my ability to choose leads to a very frustrating realization, and maybe you are having that right now. Because if I'm not happy, I have to blame me. I have to deal with this person here. See, you want to switch places? So let me stop and say, before we go further, that it's not that those other feelings are not perfectly legitimate and appropriate responses to life's circumstances, okay? So I'm not saying that if your dog dies, be happy. You should be sad. That's appropriate, okay? Your friend moves away, and of course, you feel loss. Somebody hurts you, and anger is actually a very good and appropriate response because anger is what helps us to say, that is not okay. What you did to me is not okay, and we need that. So I'm not saying that those feelings are not okay. They are, and they're important. But what we're talking about in this series is this happiness that resides in the core of who you are, okay? The roots that wrap around your soul, are they giving you life and vitality and joy and peace? Or are they choking out all the good things with anger and fear and despair? We can choose happiness. We can choose to nurture the roots of joy in our life. And when we do, God is faithful. And that is the good news, that we can trust God to keep God's promises. And God promises that his peace will guard our hearts and our minds if we lean on God. So, unfortunately, on the days that I wake up ready to blame the world or my circumstances for my bad attitude and my inability to be happy, it's not the world that needs a talking to, a straightening out. It's me. And this is coming from somebody who gets really frustrated really fast with inanimate objects. That's a whole nother story. But they can take away a lot of joy really fast for me. We have more choice in our happiness than we care to acknowledge. So the text that Beth read today, the cool thing about it is it actually reads like, it's like a step-by-step guide. Here you go. And for many of you, it's probably one of your favorite verses if you've heard it before. But before we get into that, what I want to do is I want to give us some background on the author of these verses. His name is Paul. Many of you know him. He was a Jewish leader who hunted down Christians, often having them stoned. And one day he's confronted by the voice of Jesus on the road, and suddenly he realizes that it's God he's been fighting against. And he repented. And he ends up risking his life to travel all over the Roman Empire to tell people about this Jesus. So Paul is no stranger to difficult circumstances. His advice we read this morning, those are not the flippant remarks of some guy who is unfamiliar with hard times, lived a life of ease, and says, hey, don't worry, right? In a letter to the church in Corinth, Paul lists some of the difficult experiences he had had up until that point. On 5 separate occasions, Paul received 39 lashes from the Jews. And then he was beaten with rods 3 separate times, and these beatings often brought him near death. On top of that, Paul was shipwrecked not less than 3 different times. He was constantly in danger, always looking over his shoulder wherever he traveled, which was significant distances. He knew what it was to go without food, without water, without shelter, without clothing. He knew the sting of betrayal, the withering sadness of being hated. And we actually get a lot of detail about several of these occasions, but one that I want to look at this morning, because we get the full story, and it's described in Acts in the 16th chapter, if you want to look at it later. Paul and Silas are publicly stripped and beaten, and then they're put into this inner cell in the prison, and their legs are put in stocks. Do you remember what they did to pass the time that night? They sang. They prayed to God, and they sang while the other prisoners listened. It takes a certain amount of joy to sing. Have you noticed that? Have you ever tried to sing when you just don't feel good? It is hard. As Paul and Silas are singing, a violent earthquake comes through and shakes the prison, causes the bars to open and the chains to loosen. And instead of leading a massive prison break, which Paul could have done, he convinces everyone to stay put. And he saves the jailer's life by doing so and ends up leading him to become a believer, him and all his family. So I'm telling you all of this about Paul because I think it's important when we read his words that we recognize who this man is that's talking, who this man is that gave us this message, okay? Because I don't want us to gloss over Paul's words, because he's explaining how he has learned to be content in all circumstances. And I would say he's somebody worth listening to. He is familiar with the darker things of this world. And he is actually writing this letter as a prisoner waiting for his death in Rome. And we're all going to read it together. So let's, I have it here, I think. There we go. Let's read it together. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, present your requests to God. And the peace of God that transcends all understanding will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. There's more. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, whatever thing is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned, received, or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. That wasn't super long, so I thought we could all read that one time. So what's Paul's advice here? How do we be content in all circumstances? How do we choose happiness? So I pulled out 5 things. We're going to pull out 5 things this morning. I feel like that's manageable, sort of. And if we get these 5 things, really, we're doing really good. So first, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Now, I think Paul repeats this phrase for a reason. Because I think that sentence would be really easy to gloss over. Rejoice in the Lord always. Okay, move on to the content. What do I do here? Okay? And maybe it's because it sounds like one of those churchy phrases, you know, that we kind of pass around and pick up, and nobody really ever thinks about, what does this mean? What are we saying? And so it's like Paul is saying, no, pay attention. I really mean this. Rejoice in the Lord always. You have a choice. Paul is telling us from his experience, even in a first century Roman prison, we can choose to rejoice in the Lord or not to. Happiness and contentment and joy require action and intention. It doesn't just happen. And we start by making the choice. So, first lesson from Paul's message, recognize that we have a choice. Paul continues, let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. So, one translation I read said, practice gentleness with everyone. And when I first read this, I felt like, well, that's a little strange, or just seems misplaced. What is that sentence doing here? What does this have to do with what Paul is talking about? But how we treat other people and how we talk to other people parallels how we treat and talk to ourselves. Okay? We can relate to others in ways that stir up anger, suspicion, judgment, fear, or we can nurture compassion, patience, gentleness, giving someone the benefit of the doubt. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. How do you treat people when you remember that God is near? You will feel differently on the inside, and you will experience the world differently on the outside, depending on how you choose to treat people. So the second lesson from Paul's message, practice gentleness. Who knew that would be a part of choosing happiness? So Paul goes on, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Paul is telling us this from a prison cell. Take all your worries to God, tell God everything, and trust God to provide for you, to be with you. I love that Paul says, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Because I think it speaks to who are we talking to when we ask God for things? What are we thinking in our minds? When we ask God to help us, we are asking a God who loves us, who has already given us reasons to be grateful. So coming to God, recognizing God's goodness that is already at work in your life, will change the way you feel and the way you pray. So the third and fourth lesson of Paul's message is to practice gratitude and take all your worries to God. Paul testifies that the result of living a life of rejoicing in God, of practicing gentleness in our dealings with others, of telling God our worries and our fears with gratitude for God's goodness, will be a heart and a mind that is guarded by God's peace. I don't know about you, but over the last several weeks, I have been reminded over and over that I need the peace of God to guard my heart and my mind. This is our hope. So, fifth lesson from Paul's message. Finally, brothers and sisters, writes Paul, whatever is true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, anything that is excellent or praiseworthy, about such things. What is Paul saying? Meditate on the good. Notice the good. We can develop habits, and those habits can become ruts in the way that we look at and think about the world. And we can get stuck thinking negatively, giving all of our attention to what is wrong, to the bad things that either are happening or could happen. And this is especially true the more darkness that you have experienced. The more darkness you experience, you have more and more hooks inside of you. And they will naturally pick out the bad and the ugly and the scary. What is there to be afraid of? What is there to be angry about? What is there to be sad about? And they will grab those and they will hold on to them like Velcro. We are all vulnerable to the tendency to see only the negative. And when life is hard, we need to work harder to notice the good and the beautiful. That is why Paul tells us to meditate on what is good from his prison cell. Think about what is good. So, Paul gives us these five really great ways we can choose happiness. And it's a great list, so I thought I would give you this little card with the list. You can take it. Pass those back. You can take that with you. It can be your new bookmark or just set it somewhere. Throw it away. However you feel like dealing with it, you do what you want to do. You do you. So we've got five things, but I wanted to give us some homework with just two of those. I think two is more manageable for homework. So first, gratitude. There are so many books out there right now and studies about happiness, and I am willing to bet that every single one of them will point to gratitude as a really important practice if you want to develop happiness in your life. Practicing gratitude doesn't just happen, right? It requires actual action to build that into who we are, not just the occasional thought or quick prayer here and there. So we need to find consistent ways to act on gratitude for it to become a part of who we are, about a part of how we are in the world. So here's our homework. And lucky for you, we're almost in Thanksgiving season, so this is just going to flow right in. Let's pick a gratitude practice. Pick a different one every day. Pick the same one for the rest of the month. But be intentional. Decide what you're going to do. You can start a prayer gratitude journal. Make art every day about the things that you're grateful for. Take 5 minutes to meditate on all the things God has given you, all the ways that you are grateful for what you have. Write a detailed thank you note every day. People impact our lives in positive ways, so let somebody know what they did and why it mattered to you. Pick a way to consistently practice gratitude every day. So that's one of our homework assignments. And it's in with the theme. It's great. Okay, second one. I want us to pay attention this week. I want you to make a little scoreboard somewhere. You can keep it with you, a little index card. You can post it on a mirror or something. But keep score this week of the things that you watch, listen to, and talk about. And I'm going to tell you what you're counting. So I've read this book called Daring Greatly. Brené Brown, little plug, she's great, yes. So the first chapter, she makes this point. Our national conversation we have developed this unhealthy focus on centering around two questions. What should I fear and who should I blame? How familiar does that sound? What should I fear and who should I blame? And it occurred to me this week that that is the exact opposite of what Paul is saying. Think about the things that are lovely and good and true and noble. Not what should I fear and who should I blame. So I want you to keep score. Just notice. Don't need to try to change anything just yet, but just notice what you have. So notice what you have been taking in to yourself, okay? Because so one of the rules with finances, if you're wanting to get your life on a budget and get all that figured out, is first you have to figure out what are you spending? What is happening here, right? Because a lot of times we're spending a whole lot more than what we realize on crazy stuff. Like, I just grabbed a candy bar and a coffee, and all of a sudden I'm spending like $50 more every week. How did that happen? So first, figure out what's happening, okay? So keep score. Look at the things you're reading. Just make a little note. Look at the things that you're talking about. Make a little note. Look at the things that you're seeing on TV, the things that you're reading on social media. What is popping up into your life? Just keep tabs on it. Do it just for a day and see what you see, okay? Look at what you're taking in. What should I fear? Who should I blame? We are swimming in a current that is going really strongly in that direction. And if we are going to do anything different, we can't just mean to do something different or think about it sometimes, but we have to decide and we have to act on it. So after you keep score, and you can do it for a day, a week, whatever you feel like gives you a honest picture of what you're taking in, think about how you could change that. Think about how you could change what you are putting out into the world, and think about how you could change especially what you are taking in, because you're not going to put anything different out until you're taking something different in. Right? So what will we choose? Will we choose happiness? We can't choose our experiences. We can't choose what will happen to us when we walk out these doors. But we can choose how we will respond. God gives us that. And it might feel a little uncomfortable at first that we get to choose, because that means we are responsible. But it will lead to good things if we embrace that. Because your choice, whatever you choose, is not going to just affect your life, right? It's going to affect everybody around you. And the people you spend the most time with, it will affect them the most. So if you struggle with making those choices for yourself, look at the people around you that you love and make those choices for them. We have the opportunity with our life and our choices to point people to a God who loves them, who will give them peace beyond our understanding. It's a good gift. May you choose happiness, and may God's grace and peace wrap around you and flood your soul. Let's pray.